The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz.
Good day and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Vow FM. That's the voice of Viz. We're broadcasting live from our studios right here in Bloemfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Ndiwa Mob, Justice Kavaza, and I'll be your host for today. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, for today, it is quite an interesting one. Usually, you know, we tend to focus a lot on what's going on with consumers. And for today, we decided that, you know, what we're going to tackle is something that affects all of us, whether we are aware of it or not. And that is the oil market, right? The price of oil, we always hear about, you know, the price of Brent crude has done this or it has done that. And in April, during the lockdown, we actually heard of some very interesting phenomena around the oil price, particularly when it went quote-unquote negative, and lots of people were saying it's because we were at home. So those are the things that we're going to be talking about. What actually happens with the oil price, and also, you know, what are some of the issues that actually affect what that market actually looks like. And to sort of help us to navigate this topic, we're going to be talking to Sinesi Bomanindra, who is a chartered accountant and financial news commentator. And then later on, we're going to speak to Petri Redling Hayes, who is a derivatives trader and the founder of Herenia Capital. They're going to be letting us know what's what in the world of the oil markets from an analyst point of view and from an investor point of view. Also coming up for the next hour, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's the part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And then we're going to be getting into the Buffalo Index. That's when we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. Now remember that you can keep in touch with us. We are Voice of Vits, that's of our FM 88.1 on Facebook. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then remember that our hashtag is hashtag BusinessBuzz. And remember that you can also stream the station live on VowFM.co.za, and remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz Show are available on vits.journalism.co.za/business. You can also just search for us on some of the popular podcast apps. We are available on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, or wherever you choose to listen to your podcast. You'll definitely find us there. So then make sure you hold on to your seats. We are here for the next hour. Coming up next, we're getting into the business wrap.
Business wrap with Lebo Pasha.
It's time for us to get into the business wrap. That's the part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by our financial expert. We have Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute. Lebo, greetings to you. 99 days into the lockdown.
Greetings, Mudio, and greetings to the listeners as well. 99 days, one more day to go, and we're hitting that magic 100-day mark.
Now, I think, you know, a good place to start as we, you know, approach that 100-day milestone is that the rand has actually strengthened to below the 17 mark. You know, it had been, you know, quite you know, emblematic of the lockdown that the rand actually weakened by a lot. You know, so what are you seeing on that front?
So the rand strengthened to under 17 rand to the dollar on Thursday yesterday, which is the best level in weeks. Like, we've seen it hit lows of about 1926 in May, which was quite disappointing but expected, looking at what the coronavirus pandemic has done to markets across the globe, especially emerging markets. So I've seen a lot of analysts ascribing the strengthening partly to the US and Germany coming out with really good manufacturing data. So they're trying to open up the economies again, and there's a bit of strengthening because of that. But the other good news is also There's some positive sort of expectations around a COVID-19 vaccine. And this has all resulted in a bit of confidence and a strengthening of the rand.
And then I guess on top of all that, I also hear that there are some mega projects that are being planned as part of the economic recovery. I personally haven't heard of this. You know, I'm quite keen to hear what's actually happening.
Well, for any economy to run and grow, we need infrastructure, and infrastructure projects have always helped countries. Weather the storm when it comes to recessions and economic difficulty. And we've got a couple of these really big mega projects that we're hoping will help get South Africa going again. And it's a range of projects from things like upgrades on the N3 in KZN, at the Ashburton Interchange, to even water projects. We've got a very large project in the Mukulu Crocodile Water Augmentation Project near Lipalele. So all of these projects, we really desperately need them. These are multi-billion rand projects. The great thing about projects like this is they do pull in those large corporates that need to start working again, but there's also a trickle-down effect to SMEs and also to communities in those areas that will get employment, and it does stimulate those local economies as well. So we definitely need to see a lot more of these type of projects, not just in Johannesburg, but across the length and breadth of South Africa. And some of the projects are much-needed infrastructure like water. We've got energy projects going on in the Northern Cape, like the Redstone Concentrated Solar Thermal Project. We've also got bigger projects around aviation. I'm not sure whether these will continue because of some of the strain that industry is taking. But I think one of the most exciting ones is a space infrastructure hub. And this will definitely help encourage anybody who wants to be a future Elon Musk and explore space and look at solutions in that sort of industry.
I guess as a follow-up to that, do you anticipate that any of these projects may be affected by the rising cases? It's no secret at the moment that there has been a spike in cases, particularly the Western Cape has been a hot spot all along, but now Gauteng seems to be, you know, hot on those heels, and I'm guessing it's because, you know, of all the opening up. Some of these projects, do you anticipate that whatever timelines are there or, you know, their feasibility will be affected by the spike in the cases?
There'll definitely be an effect. I think almost all corporates in South Africa are either directly impacted at the revenue line, where their customers are impacted, or that business itself will be impacted because the people in the business are impacted. So the capacity to execute on projects will definitely be impacted as well. And you've also got other issues around specific industries. So, for example, the possible aviation park at the Upington Airport or the Lancera Smart City, both of those are based around aviation as an industry. And we all know the strifes that SAA is going through, and also Comair in South Africa right now, which is in business rescue. So those projects will definitely be impacted. The extent to which they'll be impacted, we'll only really know once we move to probably level one, or we don't have lockdown anymore and we've got absolute free trade in the economy, and then we can really gauge the impact COVID-19 has had on these projects.
And then on the last point, you know, that unemployment number, I think a lot of people were quite shocked when the minister was rattling off some of the economic indicators last week in his supplementary budget speech. Can you, you know, maybe shed some light on this for us?
Yes, so this news came out last week, but I think there's a lot of exciting things that are happening. We're seeing a global trend where people who've been retrenched, laid off, people that have had their pay suspended, are actually starting up their own companies and offering services in their areas of expertise. So we've seen a huge shift towards a big adoption of work from home or people consulting and micro-jobbing and those sort of industries starting to pick up. And we're also seeing a few businesses that are looking at engaging people from across the globe to work remotely. And you'd be sitting in South Africa and working for a business that's based either in the UK or somewhere else in the world. So we've seen a huge trend towards that. And I think one of the things that definitely needs a lot of attention is looking at the youth, because we've seen youth unemployment as well shooting up. And we definitely need to start looking at solutions around how do we find ways to engage the youth and get them economically active again.
So that's been it with our financial expert. That was Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute, just giving us a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news, starting off talking about the fact that the rand has actually strengthened to being below that 17 to the dollar mark, and then talking about mega projects slated to drive economic recovery in South Africa, you know, around infrastructure and water projects, which is very good for creating employment, especially because he ends off by highlighting the fact that unemployment is now sitting at 30.1%, but it does provide an opportunity for people that there's been a trend around the world where people are shifting towards starting their own businesses, maybe getting into some freelancing as a way to make ends meet. But he also just highlights the fact that even though you do have some of these mega projects that are meant to, you know, get things going again, there might be an effect on the feasibility and even the timelines of some of these projects, given the increase in COVID-19 cases, which is currently being experienced in South Africa. So that's been it in terms of the business wrap. Thank you so much to Lebo for the weekly dose of business wisdom. After the break, we get into the Buffalo Index. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Wrap with Lebo Pasha. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the state of your 100 Rand with our Buffalo Index. That's when we tell you what your 100 Rand can do for you. And since today we are talking about the oil market, especially in light of, you know, the fuel price hike, we thought that we'll tell you what your 100 Rand could do for you in the fuel market in April versus what it's going to be able to do for you in July. Now, in April, we saw some very low fuel prices, and back then with 95 petrol you could actually get about 7.16 liters of 95 petrol for your Buffalo, about 7.26 liters for in terms of the 93 petrol, and then a 0.05% diesel was coming in for about 7.8 liters, and then illuminating paraffin, you could get yourself about 14.8 liters in the market in April for your Buffalo. But now, because prices are going up, you can only get 6.6 liters for the Buffalo on the 95 side, and then you can now get about 6.74 liters for the 95, about 7.6 liters in terms of the 0.05% diesel, and then illuminating paraffin, you can now get about 14.2 liters for your Buffalo. To sort of add some context into what some of that means, if you drove or drive a normal little car, sort of I'm thinking a Toyota Yaris or something like that, or a Polo, that's usually between about, 35 to 40 liters. And 35 liters, it means that in April, you could get about, 481 rand for 93. That's how much it would take to fill up that tank. But now to fill up the same tank is going to cost you about, 50 rand more at close to 530 rand. So that's what your Buffalo is looking like. That's what your Buffalo can get you in the fuel market. You know, if you are lucky enough to do it before, you know, the price spike, you know, then good for you. But otherwise, for everyone else, we'll just be contending. The other interesting thing to note is that as prices are creeping up, they're slowly but surely sort of inching up to where they were in March, you know, because in March they were actually much higher than they were a little bit higher than where they are currently, but slowly but surely they are getting there. So that's it in terms of the Buffalo Index. On the other side of this, we get into the main topic.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz. For the youth, by the youth, we are Power FM. Power FM 88.1. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. It's time for us to get into the main topic for today's show. And for today, we're going to be talking about something that, you know, we hear and see being quoted all the time. That's the oil price. But it's something that is that really does affect all of our lives in one way or another. We might not realize it. You might not even be a driver of a car. But, you know, the oil price around the world does affect all of our lives, at least economically in one way or another. So if you want to join the conversation around this, remember that you can find us on Facebook. We are Vow FM, that's the voice of Vits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at Vow FM, and our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So to start off, we're going to be talking to Petri Redling-Hayes, who is the founder of Herenya Capital, capital and also a derivatives trader. And he's going to be explaining to us what actually goes on in this market and to sort of help unpack it for us. Petri, greetings to you.
Greetings. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the opportunity.
No. Thank you for taking your time to be with us. I guess as a starting point, you know, could you explain to us, you know, how the oil market actually works and how it's actually, you know, set? Like, is it free market forces? Is there a mafia or, you know, that's there, you know, setting this thing for us? Like, how does it actually work?
So there is a bit of a mafia, I suppose. They're called OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. They're basically like a group of countries that are the major oil producers of the world. And what they do, they call themselves a cartel, or the OPEC cartel, or whatever you want to call them. I think it's Organization of Petroleum Exporting Cartel or Countries or whatever. I'm not sure what the C stands for. But, you know, as far as we're taught and see, cartels aren't exactly the nicest things. Governments are generally against them. But when a whole bunch of governments band together to form one, I guess it's okay, because it's just how it's been for the last, you know, who knows how many years. In any case, what they tend to do, obviously, they're not the only oil producers, but they are collectively the majority, the major oil producers, the guys that make the most oil in the world. And what they do is they try to control or influence the price of oil by adjusting how much oil they produce. So they do like coordinated production cuts or production increases in oil so that they can either supply more oil to the market and, you know, put a cap on prices, or create a bit of a shortage in oil and thus, you know, push the price up. But, you know, outside of that, generally it's free market forces. So when, economic times are good and people expect the economy to grow, the oil price tends to rise because they're anticipating higher demand for oil as the world economy expands and continues to grow. And as we've seen now with the COVID pandemic, when demand suddenly drops, the oil price comes down with it, and then there's an oversupply in the market, and then OPEC will make a lot of noise and cut supply to try and do coordinated cuts. Every person or every country in OPEC has to cut 5% or 2% or whatever of their oil production on a daily basis in order to try and dry up the supply in the market so that they can put a floor on prices and make sure the prices don't fall down to
to prices so low that they can't make money anymore. So it's a bit of a, it is quite a complicated picture where you have a combination of, you know, free market supply and demand dynamic, but you also have this organization of petroleum exporting countries that, you know, try to influence the world price by basically controlling how much the countries in their organization produce. And that way it's controlling the supply side of the market, if that makes sense.
Now, Petri, there are a couple of variations that we hear being reported about. Usually we hear about, you know, Brent crude. I think, you know, in some of my personal reading, I think there's NYMEX and a bunch of others, you know. What is the actual difference between these, and why is it that we always quote the Brent?
So Brent crude is, it depends on where it's traded, right? So you get Brent crude, you get NYMEX crude, and you get WTI, right? WTI crude. So basically Brent crude is traded in London. So that is a futures sort of price on London. So let me explain this first. So oil is generally, because it takes very long to produce, right? If you were to, you know, you can't, there's no mall that you can go to and buy oil, right? So you have to order it, and it's sort of pumped out the ground and then refined and put through a whole bunch of processes. And by the time it reaches you, you know, a few months have passed from the point that it gets pumped out of wherever it gets pumped out of, whether it's an ocean rig or out of the ground in the desert somewhere or whatever the case is. So people then buy futures contracts for delivery at some point in the future. I think, I'm not sure how familiar your listeners would be with what a futures contract is. It's basically, it's when you buy something today at a price set today for delivery at some point in future, right? So those are the contracts, those are the prices that get quoted on the news all the time, the oil futures contract prices. So what happens is, depending on where the oil is produced and where it is traded, is determining, you know, what determines what the name of the contract is. So the Brent crude oil price is predominantly oil produced by OPEC and traded on the London Futures Exchange, right? As where West Texas Intermediate crude oil, or WTI, is oil that is produced in the United States and traded in the United States. So there's a difference in price there. The West Texas Intermediate crude oil is generally cheaper than the Brent crude oil, simply because in America, it's produced there, and there's a lot of less transportation cost involved with that. As where Brent crude oil is produced in, like, Saudi Arabia, for example, and the transportation cost is generally higher to get it to the United States, right? And then NYMEX crude is also just crude that's traded on a different exchange in the U.S.
I guess the next question, because of the way that you've described it, is, you know, for some of our more enterprising listeners who might be, you know, thinking of somewhere to put their money and they would like to get into the actual market and, you know, perhaps trade, whether it's NYMEX, WTI, or Brent, how can someone actually get into oil investing? Like, what type of products? Like, is there a broker? Is there a guy at a corner somewhere that you give money and then they buy you oil? Like, how does that actually happen?
So it depends on what your objective is, right? If you want to trade, as in short-term buying and selling or speculating in oil price movements, so you're trying to make money off short-term fluctuations of the price going up and down, then you would use a derivative of sorts. So you would either buy and sell oil futures, or you would buy and sell like a CFD on the oil price, and you could do that in any number of different ways. You know, trading platforms generally have an oil contract that you can trade, and, you know, holding the contract charges you interest the longer you hold it, that kind of thing, because the idea is really to buy and sell the stuff on a regular basis, right, and to make profit from the fluctuations in price. So this is where the futures price and the contracts that we quote, a lot of people trade those contracts, right? They tend to be really, really big contracts, so it's not necessarily very easy for people to get into those. I think some of the smaller oil contracts available to via South African brokers is like $40,000 a contract, right? So they're generally rather big. For somebody who wants to invest in oil, the better way to do that is perhaps using something like an ETF. So the ETF is an exchange-traded fund, and that fund is then invested in oil futures contracts, right? But those you can hold for a long period of time. So there's a number of different ones. I think it's called SBA Oil. Is an ETN actually? So ETF, ETN, same different name. But basically, that holds underlying oil futures contracts, and then you can invest in that and hold it for the next 10 or 20 years as an investment, right? As we couldn't really hold a futures contract as an investment because at some point it expires, and then somebody phones you up and says, cool, where do we deliver your oil, right? So the ETF is probably, or the ETN, is probably the better way to invest in that, and there's one listed on the JSC, obviously, so you can buy that through an ETF account or a normal stockbroking account or through someone like ETFSA or whatever the case is, save into it every month. Alternatively, if you want to trade, you can then either use a local sort of trading account that has oil derivative on it, or you can do an offshore trading account and trade like the real deal oil futures in London.
On that, actually, as someone who is familiar with the markets, we'd be keen to understand or at least get your take on, I guess the different market structures, because the RAND, for example, currencies are constantly fluctuating. They don't switch off. Stock exchanges, you trade between certain hours of the day, like the JSE, I think, is from 9 until like 5 or something like that on a daily basis. Then you wait for the next day for things to happen. And then at the same time, you have the OPEC situation that you described for us at the beginning, where you have a quote-unquote cartel of countries that are there setting the prices. Which of these markets or systems or structures, whatever, do you think is perhaps, more efficient or just drawing parallels between them?
So our market is obviously a lot smaller than the rest of the world, particularly when you compare us to places like the UK or London, Europe, or the United States, right? So that's the primary reason why our market sort of opens at 9 and closes at 5, as where somewhere in the US, for example, there's a pre-market period that lasts a few hours, there's an after-market period that lasts a few hours, and then there's obviously the time that the market is open. And then with futures contracts in the US and in Europe, you have 24-hour markets on futures, so they don't close, right? So the oil Brent crude oil contract, for example, doesn't close. That trades Monday to Friday, 24 hours a day. It's only closed over the weekends. As we're in South Africa, because our market is not as big and there's just not as much liquidity, not as many people trading, we have to close the market. Otherwise, nobody's going to be trading at 8 o'clock tonight. But people trading oil, for example, are trading oil in London from all over the world. So because there's so many different time zones interacting with the same market, you can have a 24-hour market. So, again, it depends on, to take money offshore and to invest or to trade in oil contracts on the London Stock Exchange is, a very onerous task, and you'll generally need quite a bit of money to do that. So the easiest way for South Africans who don't have $50,000 or $100,000 to trade oil contracts within London can do that by trading sort of a local ETF on the thing, which is then trades Monday to Friday 8 to 5, right? Or 9 to 5. So it really depends on, I don't think it's quite as much a question of like, what's the most efficient way of doing it, but really what's the way that you, that's most, best suited to you and where you are in your journey as an investor, if I can say that.
I guess now bringing it back down to, ordinary life, everyday, day-to-day life, people that are at the pump, whatever it is, where do you see, the oil market or the oil price going, for the rest of the year? It did some interesting things during the more stricter lockdowns, but now it seems to have, rebounded. Do you sort of see it going back down, or do you see it perhaps having stabilized, or is it going to go up?
I think it's going to go up, to tell you the truth. But before I get into that, I just want to sort of go back to what you were talking about in the intro, how the oil price touches all of our lives in some way or another, right? We might not be directly invested in oil or trading it, but we have to remember that you know, from oil you make petrol, and petrol is used to transport many of the goods that we eat every day, for example, or the clothing that we wear. All this stuff is somehow transported from wherever it is produced to wherever it is sold, and then, you know, to wherever it is consumed. And therefore, the oil price has a direct impact on inflation, right? So we see a couple of things. When the rand gets stronger, the rand price of oil gets cheaper. But when the rand weakens, the rand price of oil gets more expensive. And that is then, so then you can also overlay the actual oil price movement on that. And then you've got two forces that now influence inflation because, you know, getting the, you know, getting bread, for example, to the store, it has to be transported from somewhere. And that transportation cost goes up and down depending on what the petrol price is doing. That's being influenced by both the rand and the oil price. So it does really, truly impact every single one of us, right, in some way, shape, or form. And then in terms of, like, what do I think is going to happen to the oil price? So there's a number of – it's quite a complicated answer to this. So I think the oil price goes up from here, not, you know, very, very quickly. It doesn't go straight to 80 in the next couple of days. But what's been happening is oil to – start an oil rig or to build an oil rig takes 5 to 7 years, right? I mean, these offshore oil rigs are massive. I mean, they're huge. They're like skyscrapers, basically. So to build one of these things takes a very long time and is a huge investment. So what we've seen is that about 5 years ago, new investments into new oil projects kind of stopped, right? Not completely, but was significantly lower than it had been in the previous, in the period leading up to that. So it's like this cycle, right? So there's a lot of oil investment, and then there's too much sort of production, so nobody invests in new projects anymore, and then there's a shortage in the market, so lots of people invest in oil projects, and then there's a surplus, and this is like this long sort of economic cycle that takes place. I'm sure the economic students would have learned about this, right? So about 5 years ago, we saw the last major investments into new oil projects was about 5 years ago, which means that those projects that were invested in then are only going to start coming online sort of now, right? And then there's no new investments since then, which means that the projects that were invested in then are going to come online now, and then there's no new projects coming online. But on a global scale, the demand for oil is only going to increase over the next sort of 2 to 3 decades, because electronic vehicles are coming, yes, but they're still just a small fraction of the market. And, you know, more than just cars run on oil. There's airplanes, boats, and all sorts of stuff, right? So, I mean, in our case, sometimes, you know, power stations. But so what I think sort of happens, or some of the research that we've done, sort of indicates that we may be moving into a space where over the next 2 to 5 years, we have a structural shortage in oil output. So there's just not going to be enough oil for the amount of economic activity that there is, and that in turn will push up the price of oil. And as the price of oil goes up, you know, we'll see people going, well, there's a lot of money to be made, let's invest in some oil projects. But then 5 to 7 years later, only does that supply, that new supply, come online. So I think that we go into a sort of structural bull market in the oil price based on the fact that there's going to be a shortage in supply, right? And yes, during COVID, the oil price absolutely tanked. But for the most part, that was because there was just this global shutdown and a very, very sudden demand side shock where demand just disappeared. And that kind of, you know, takes your eye off the ball and is a bit of a distraction, if you will. But, you know, it doesn't change the fact that once the world starts coming out of lockdown and starts recovering from COVID, there's still this structural shortage in the oil market that's looming, that's like a year or two away, right? So I think based on that, it's a pretty good time to get invested in oil.
So that's been it. We were in conversation with Petri Redling-Hayes, who is the founder of Hirenia Capital and a derivatives trader, just running us through what actually makes up the oil market, letting us know about the cartel called OPEC, that is the Organization of Petroleum, petroleum exporting countries. Yes. Yeah, that's what it stands for. Talking about how they actually help to set the price for oil, and that it's not necessarily just a free market. Also telling us about how the oil prices actually sit and how we see different oil prices being quoted, and also giving us some options around how to actually get into oil trading. But he's just highlighting the fact that there is quite a high barrier of entry for the normal person. Ending off just talking about the fact that he thinks that we're likely to see oil going up, and that at least, in the coming future, there's going to be an increased demand, which will, likely drive up the price, perhaps not overnight, but at least, over some time, especially as the world's population grows and, we need more, products being sold, manufactured, because all of this stuff, goods and services need to be transported in one way or another. So it is affecting all of our lives. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we're going to be getting an analyst perspective just around this. So keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Forget what the little birdie told you. Follow us at BoFM and join the conversation. Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are talking about the all-important oil markets. It's one of those products that is, affects all of us, since we have to get from A to B. And right now we just want to get an analyst perspective of, the oil markets, so that we can better understand what's going on in and around this very important topic. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on social media. That's VAW FM or Voice of Vids. And then on our other Facebook page, that is the Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VFM, and then our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. So to sort of help us, navigate what the analysts actually look at when it comes to the oil markets, we are joined by Sinesipho Maninjwa, who is a chartered accountant and a financial news commentator. Sinesipho, greetings to you.
Hi, how are you today?
No, we're doing all right. I think one of the most interesting things to have happened during the lockdown was these negative oil prices that I said to have happened. Could you perhaps please take us through that particular oil market crash, and perhaps some of the reasons around what actually caused it?
I'm just going to do a slight correction. So it wasn't an oil price crash, it was an oil futures market crash. So just to explain to people to understand what it actually is. You get what you would call futures. And the oil market crash happened on the U.S. WIX Texas Intermediary Crude Futures. It's the largest crude future market globally. And what happened was that, so how futures work, just give you context. So because oil is a live commodity, what usually happens is that you sort of agree to buy or sell at a specific date in 3 months. They usually do these contracts in rolling 3 month periods. And what happened is, if you looked at the outlook of January is when you would have entered into the contract, the oil contract future. And you, at January, the price of oil was hovering around $55-$60, around there. So you could take a bet that in April, which is when the futures expired, that the price would be looking at a particular way. You could, without a doubt, take a bet. Now, of course, February, the impact of COVID hits us square in the face. And with the lockdown, a global lockdown, what happened was that everyone was overstocked. And the overstock was as a result of the fact that airlines were closed, factories were closed. So no one was, there was no need for oil. So what happened was that it got so bad that, in a sense, the oil producers had to effectively, how the contract was so negative that they effectively had to pay people to take their products. And it happened, so that happened in April, May. Now, if you look at the contracts that are closing now in June, they're not negative as bad because of two factors. One, the producers of oil have agreed to reduce supply in the market, reduce crude production in the market to adjust for the new world in order to drive up demand. And with some of the world slowly reopening, not all the way 100% reopening, there hasn't been a need it has rallied oil prices a little bit, but still nowhere near where they were in January. So that's, in a sense, what happened.
I guess the next question, which sort of makes sense from then, is, did this actual crash in these oil futures actually affect any industries, sort of given the fact that at the time people were at home, there wasn't that much travel. So on the direct side, one wouldn't expect. But I guess, from a broader point of view, were there industries that were actually affected by what happened, when that crash happened?
The oil price is sort of a double-edged sword. On one hand, you want an indicator, you want it to go up, but you don't want to get it too high. Reason being is that oil is a function of productivity, global productivity in the market. It means that industry is moving and we are building more cities, we're traveling more. That's what it's an indicator of. Now, the industries that were affected by this were quite simple. Those were your chemicals, and specifically petrochem, as well as your commodity entities such as your likes of Sasol here locally, Chevron, Shell, and BP. Because effectively, with the price of oil having come down so significantly, your operating cost to run your business still does not change. So fundamentally, it's like I said, it's a double-edged sword if you look at it.
And then I guess then from there, what is now the outlook? As you were talking earlier on, things seem to have, kind of normalized, and life as we start, opening up a little bit more, things are sort of, going back to normal. But for sort of the people in the market, investors, etc., what is the actual outlook? We've seen some volatility, Sasol, things like that. So where do you see all of that going?
So it depends almost because of pandemic. So it's stabilized a little bit. Like I said, it's still nowhere in January level. Supply is still very much quite high, and demand just has not picked up to where it needs to be. Because as we have more spikes, the more sovereigns are under pressure to go back to a harder form of a lockdown and to control the virus, because in effect you can't control. So it's tightening. The third issue is coronavirus. It literally is coronavirus, and you've got we're still very much in the first peak. So unless we get a handle on that, we're nowhere going back to active living. Yes, lockdown has eased, but that has been driven more of from the citizens are poor phase, and they're starving. So either the virus will kill them or lack of food will. So that's what's been driving the lockdown, relaxation of the lockdowns globally. Not necessarily that the disease is getting under control. We're still seeing crazy numbers in the US, crazy numbers in Europe, Asia, South America, specifically Brazil, crazy, crazy, crazy numbers. And that's just a function of it, is that people are sort of being made to make a hard choice. you can lock down the country and get a hold of corona, but then people will starve. Or you can reopen, except that people will be eating at least, but corona still, it's a double-edged sword. So until we get sight of what would happen, specifically with corona, I don't see it changing anytime soon. The outlook, like I said, it's constrained. We have a constrained outlook.
And then the other question to then ask, because during the lockdown period, especially when we were still, you know, in the stricter level 5 and 4, people were hardly using their cars. We saw prices dropping for fuel, I think by about 25%. I myself, you know, was experiencing living my best life at the pump. Ever since then, you know, prices have been creeping up. And we know that the petrol price is actually set to increase by about 1 rand 72 cents in the near future. So what type of relationships, you know, for our listeners' benefit, actually exists between what happens in those oil markets versus the actual petrol price that we as consumers actually end up getting at the pump?
Just to give you a context, the little demand we see in our little Southie country has really no effect on the oil price. So there are two things that primarily affect the oil price: global demand and global supply, and for us in Africa, the rand-dollar exchange. That is where the primary gain. So you had two things happen which allowed for the first price decrease, in the South African market specifically. You had, number one, global demand. Prices went down to, I think they were trading at some 20-something US dollars. So that allowed the price decrease, even though the rand had increased. Now you've got oil which is back at semi-40 US dollars. And you saw the rand dollar exchange, so that's why the price is having to come up a bit. But it's still, you are still effectively paying less for petrol today than you were paying for in January. And that's just the power of it. If the rand dollar were to behave, we would be seeing another cut, but our rand dollar doesn't want to behave. So that's also a primary factor. I think we sometimes forget, we think South Africa moves and shakes global commodities. That's really not the case, specifically when it comes to other commodities, but not oil. Because effectively, remember, we import it. We're an importer of oil. We don't produce it. We're an importer.
Very much understood on that side of being an importer of oil and that currency exchange rates. So as we end off, I guess, what's your outlook for oil at the moment? Could we, you know, perhaps see prices doubling? Could we just see slow progression? Where do you see things going?
I see the price stabilizing. I think we won't get to as bad as it was in March, April, because I think that was a bit of a shock to the system. But I don't see us doubling. I'm quoting a Citibank analyst. They were like, the days of $100 a barrel are gone. Those days are gone. We must forget those days have existed. So that's not going to happen. But I see it stabilizing more. But if we enter into a second wave of a global lockdown, we might be saying a different sentence altogether.
So you heard it right there. That was us with Sinesipho Manindwa, just explaining to us, you know, the oil markets and some of the reasons why we heard about the oil price becoming negative. Just explaining at the beginning that it wasn't necessarily an oil price crash, but rather what was going in the oil futures markets, you know, where people were sort of trying to think of what was going to happen, you know, down the line. And just explaining as well, what actually happens when South Africa gets oil internationally, because it's more, she's saying it's more of a function of where the rand dollar exchange rate is sitting, because South Africa is not an oil producer. We are a country that actually imports its oil, so where the rand dollar exchange rate actually sits affects where, you know, where local prices are going to be on the pump side. Otherwise, she's just also ending off by saying that prices seem to, she's expecting that things are just going to stabilize where they are. The days of $100 for a barrel of oil, those days are gone. So that's been it. Thank you so much to Senior Sipo for just explaining that to us. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
Voice of Wits has signed a code of conduct that is enforced by the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa. Under the code, we are committed to broadcasting news that is accurate, comment that is fair, and programming that is not harmful to children, does not amount to hate speech, and contains no gratuitous violence or explicit sex. If you think we are not living up to the code, you may inform the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa. Direct any complaints in writing to BCCSA, PO Box 412365, Craig Hall 2024, or send a fax to 011-325-5376, or an email to bccsa@nabsa.co.za. For more information, please visit www.bccsa.co.za. You're tuned in to The Business Buzz.
Thank you so much to everyone who's listening to the show. We've come to the end of today's edition of The Business Buzz. Thank you so much to our guests. That was Senior Sipo and Petri for just shedding some light on what the oil market is about and how all of that actually translates into some of the fuel prices that we are all getting at the pump. Also just highlighting the fact that oil is one of those things that is affecting all of us, and the fact that transport is one of those essential things, moving goods and people all over the place. The oil price is definitely one of those things that is affecting all of us. Now, personally, I tend to agree with Petri on this, that you know, we might see the oil price rising over time, especially over a long term. For the rest of this year, who knows where that demand is going to go, particularly given the uncertainty around the actual recovery and whether, you know, the opening up is going to allow for demand to come back to where it was at the start of the year. But as people, you know, go back to work, everyone is trying to get back to normal, so that might be a contributing factor on that end. Otherwise, over time, we are likely to see things going up. But this is where Senior Sipo's point really does come to the fore, that we are unlikely to see oil touching that old $100 price going forward. Also just highlighting the fact that you know, the markets work in different ways. The rand, for example, is subject to free market in the same way that the JSC and other stock exchanges, you know, it's a buy and sell. You're thinking about what's going to happen, whereas the oil markets, on the other hand, you have a small group of countries that are sitting there and actually deciding how they can exploit the supply and demand factors to actually influence the price. So that's been it for today. Remember that you can engage with us. Let us know what you think on social media. We are VAU FM, or Voice of Wits on Facebook, and then our other page is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAU FM, and our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. Remember that you can also search for us on iono.fm for our podcast, and links, all of them, you can find them there. And then you can also find our other podcasts and content on wits.journalism.co.za/business. So that's it. Thank you to everyone who was listening today. Thank you to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutlwano Zerame, together with our executive producer, that is Glory Mabuza. Our producer is Slindile Musibi. So don't miss The Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the VAU FM lineup. So for myself, Mdeo Mob Justice Kabasa, and the rest of the team, it is take care.
Mob Justice on The Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.